will have more positive attitude to getting funds to make this relocation happen.
A dispute over leadership in New Talk is resolved. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, August 7th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, state budget cuts impact the caseload of district attorneys.
Even if it's a good case, if it takes a lot of work and is not significantly important, they will dismiss it.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Spinard Builder Supply. For more than 60 years, SBS has helped Alaskans build from ground to roof to everything in between. Spinard Builder Supply is here to build with you.
The University of Alaska Southeast School of Management offers online college degrees for the unconventional student or working professional who wants learning on their schedule and timeline. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by UAS.
A federal appeals panel has sided with the new leaders in a tribal power dispute that has complicated efforts to relocate a badly eroded village in western Alaska. Tom John, a tribal administrator with the new council called New Talk Village Council, says he learned of the decision by email this morning, and it's a relief.
Yesterday, August 6, finally made their decision who is legitimate New Talk tribal government, and I'm very elated to hear finally. Been concerned, worried all this time, couldn't sleep. Hopefully I'll have a good night's sleep tonight.
The Interior Board of Indian Appeals stepped in to review a 2013 ruling by the Bureau of Indian Affairs that said the sitting tribal council no longer represented the Yupik community of New Talk for bureau funding purposes. The old council appealed the decision, which gave local power to a new group that claimed to be the rightfully elected council. The appeals board says in its Thursday decision that the old faction failed to submit any evidence in support of its own claim of continuing authority. The power dispute stalled millions of dollars in government funds for the flood-prone village's efforts to move to higher ground. John says now the hard work begins.
Pretty soon we will have a New Talk planning group meeting at Anchorage with different agencies, with state agencies, federal, FEMA, and all the agencies that we've been meeting in previous years. I think we'll have more positive attitude to getting funds to make this relocation happen.
Andy Patrick, who leads the New Talk Traditional Council, was contacted for the story but refused to comment. Fewer crimes in Petersburg could be prosecuted in the near future. At least that's what the Petersburg borough fears might happen with the budget cuts to the regional DA's office. KFSK's Angela Denning reports.
Everyone knows the story by now. Very low oil prices caused state budget cuts in all branches of government. What that means for prosecuting crime in Southeast was conveyed in a recent email from Juneau's district attorney James Scott to local police departments. He says the state attorneys will still look at each crime on a case-by-case basis, but minor mistakes in reports will likely put the case to the bottom of the pile.
So what I find myself and what other lawyers find ourselves doing is taking that file that has the minor mistake in it that in the past we would have rectified in an afternoon, and putting that file aside and turning our attention to another file that doesn't have that mistake and that needs to be processed in a timely manner.
Scott says he's not being critical of local law enforcement offices. He knows everyone is busy. But he wants officers to know how they can help prevent hang-ups. Petersburg Borough Manager Steve Giesbrecht conveyed the message to the Borough Assembly at their last meeting.
They don't have the staff, and they will make decisions based on, even if it's a good case, if it takes a lot of work and is not significantly important, they will dismiss it.
The Department of Law cuts include three full-time positions in Southeast, an assistant DA in Juneau, a law office assistant in Juneau, and an assistant in Sitka. That leaves just three lawyers in Juneau to prosecute cases in Southeast. Petersburg Assemblyman John Haverlick pressed the borough manager for what it might mean locally.
Is that there are arrests that the police aren't going to make, or for certain things, or what's that picture look like?
Giesbrecht said that Petersburg has a great relationship with Scott, but with his office being so short-staffed, he's going to find it difficult to maintain his presence here.
He's very clearly said, look, I'm not going to make as many trips to Petersburg. In fact, they may be long periods of time where I'm not available to come.
The reality is he lost a third of his attorney staff and 50% of his support staff.
That's Kelly Swihart, Petersburg's police chief.
So cuts are going to have to be made somewhere. We're kind of waiting and seeing how it shakes out.
Swihart said so far, no Petersburg cases have been declined, but he would like to follow Scott's suggestions and do more preparation locally before submitting cases to Juneau. He said they recently consulted with a retired prosecutor on a complicated case to make sure they were on track.
So if we can get all those boxes checked before we send a case to the DA's office, hopefully there'll be less questions later and that dismissal rate won't go up.
And essentially, it's up to the local PD as to what gets sent to Juneau. Not everything constitutes a crime.
There are cases where we can just write a simple ticket, they go pay their fine at the office and they're done with it, rather than go through that criminal process.
In the Juneau DA's office, Scott is trying to continue to do his work as usual, even though his caseload went up one-third overnight.
We have more balls in the air than we're used to, and I've been with the department for about 17 years, and I've just never seen a situation where we have as much work as we have and as little staff as we have to handle it. But so far, we're getting by.
Department of Law budget cuts haven't just hit Southeast Alaska. The DA office in Barrow was closed down, and cases from that region are now being prosecuted in Fairbanks. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Officials say a 3-year-old boy shot and killed himself inside an Anchorage home. Police received a call just after noon on Wednesday reporting the shooting at a home in southeast Anchorage. The child was pronounced dead at the scene. Investigators concluded the child fatally shot himself with a gun he found inside the home. No charges have been filed, but the case has been sent to the district attorney's office for review. There were 3 adults in the home at the time of the shooting. Shell Oil's Fenica icebreaker departed Dutch Harbor for the Chukchi Sea yesterday afternoon. That's a day and a half after it arrived from Oregon. The Fenica is now headed north on the 1,100-mile voyage to Shell's drill site. The Fenica has to be in place in the Chukchi Sea before the Interior Department will let Shell drill into oil-bearing rocks beneath the sea floor. Interior Department officials said they expect to quickly approve the deeper drilling once the Fenica and its safety equipment are on site. Another icebreaker is still in Dutch Harbor. It's the Healy, the Coast Guard's largest ship. It's scheduled to depart on Sunday on its way to the North Pole. It's helping an international team of scientists study the rapidly changing chemistry of the Arctic Ocean. Phoebe Lamb is part of that team. She's a geochemist from the University of California at Santa Cruz. The scientists will bring up water samples from the depths to see just what the Arctic Ocean is made of.
I'm measuring particles and the chemical composition of particles. A biologist would call them plankton, a geochemist calls them particles. It's the same thing. It's just stuff in the ocean.
So is a whale a really big particle?
Yes. I hope not to get them because they're hard to process.
Lamb says studying chemistry is like doing forensics. It helps you understand what happened when you weren't there to see it yourself. Scientists can use obscure elements and isotopes to figure out questions like how fast the Arctic Ocean is taking up industrial greenhouse gases out of the atmosphere. This is the Healy's second Arctic mission this year. The first mission focused on testing equipment and practicing search and rescue in polar conditions. The Coast Guard only has 2 icebreakers in working condition, but it's trying to expand its capabilities in the Arctic. Captain Jason Hamilton says the mission in July encountered more sea ice than they were expecting, so the Healy detoured to the west.
One of the first rules of icebreaking is if you can avoid it, avoid it. When you break ice, it's more fuel, it is harder on the hull, it's slower. So if you can take the path of least resistance, you take the path of least resistance.
This week, the National Snow and Ice Data Center reported that the overall area of Arctic sea ice for July was below average. The center says the northern sea route across the Arctic is now open. The Healy is one of three icebreakers cruising the Arctic for science this summer. The international collaboration also includes scientists on board Canadian and German icebreakers. They aim to get a baseline of conditions in the Arctic before the expected increase in shipping and resource extraction brings more pollution to the relatively pristine region. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, triumphant Alaskan athletes return from the Special Olympic World Games.
When I got home, everyone in Kodiak was at the airport. They were hearing clank, clank, clank of my medals.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Alaska oil and gas have a huge impact on all of us, but how much do you really know about them? At akoilandgas.com, you can take an oil and gas IQ quiz and get the facts from reliable sources. This message sponsored by the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2015 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
A small airplane was found this morning on Kanik'ar mudflats near a small Anchorage airport, but state and federal authorities say they don't know who was on board. Alaska State Troopers in Palmer took a call just after midnight reporting a downed airplane west of Birchwood Airport. The airport is near Anchorage's north border. The Alaska Rescue Coordination Center launched airplanes to search, and the small airplane was found at 6:10 a.m., about 2 miles northeast of the Birchwood Airport. No pilot or passengers were with the downed airplane. Troopers say the downed plane may have left from the McGrath area. No flights have been reported as overdue. Troopers say a search is continuing. Two Juno swimmers returned from the Special Olympic World Games in Los Angeles with 5 medals. CJ Ums and Christine Quick competed alongside 6,500 athletes with intellectual disabilities from around the world. KTOO's Lisa Fu has more.
Juno swimmer Christine Quick says Michael Phelps is taller than she thought he was. The most decorated Olympic athlete of all time took pictures with Special Olympians and jumped in the pool for a swim.
What was that like?
Happy. My team is crazy. See him.
Quick earned 2 gold medals and a 7th place finish in backstroke and freestyle events. She says the cheering from the crowd helped motivate her. She's never received so much attention.
Everybody say yay. People take a picture of us.
CJ Ums is another Juno swimmer. He received gold, silver, and bronze medals and a 4th place ribbon in backstroke and freestyle events. His mother, Michelle Ums, is a coach for Juno's Special Olympics program.
The finish on the 4th place ribbon and the finish on the silver medal, he was just as happy as a clam both times. It didn't matter. He was just so glad to finish.
Ums was in L.A. for the games with her husband and other family members. She watched every event her son and Quick competed in.
The whole week was amazing. Watching both of them act independently and responsibly. But to see them both as young adults get up on a stage, accept their medals in an environment where they were treated with a lot of respect is over the top for me.
Both Juno athletes get to take a short break from training as they enjoy the afterglow of the World Games. Quick will start swimming again in the winter, and Ums will start bowling in a few weeks. In Juno, I'm Lisa Fu.
A Kodiak athlete also had great success at the Special Olympics. 27-year-old Brittany Trigarthen represented the United States in powerlifting at this year's Games. She went from winning gold on the state level to earning recognition on a global level. She won a silver in bench press, a bronze in squats, a 2nd bronze in the combination of lifts overall, and a 4th place in deadlift. She bench pressed 110 pounds and deadlifted almost 160. She says she got a surprise after flying back to Kodiak on Monday night.
When I got home, everyone in Kodiak was at the airport and they were hearing waiting for me to come in. They were hearing clank, clank, clank of my medals.
Dan Canavan is the Special Olympics volunteer director in Kodiak. He says the Special Olympics mirror the source of its name closely. The competition is fierce and the athletes bring impressive talent from their various countries.
I think what it did was raise that awareness that through sports that we are serious athletes competing at a very high level and really vital members of the community. I think Kodiak gets that, and they support us in a big way.
Another Alaskan athlete that brought home a medal from the World Games was Garrett Stortz of the Matsu Valley. Garrett brought home a bronze medal for level 5 golf. He shot a 77 on the final day, a personal best record for him. Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott says Alaskans need a unified voice to push the federal government to question mines across the border in British Columbia. Addressing a Thursday meeting of tribal business and conservation leaders, he said the state will share its knowledge and ask for input on mines near rivers that flow into Alaska. He said it's time for more than words.
You can scream all you want. You can go to the governor. He might try to force me to do something, and he very well could. But that's not the way we should do it. We've had too much of that.
Critics accuse state officials of keeping them in the dark about BC mining projects, which they say will threaten Southeast fisheries. They've also asked the state to push the federal government to bring the issue before the International Joint Commission, which addressed U.S.-Canada water disputes. Commission expert David LaRoche says that's unlikely because Canada has shown no interest. But he said a U.S. State Department request for a panel examination would catch their attention.
Not because you're going to get one, but because it would finally and officially serve notice that the U.S. federal government is really taking this issue seriously, which has yet to occur.
Mallott met this summer with U.S. and Canadian officials and said they viewed the transboundary mine issue as local, not international. But he told those at the meeting that the state will keep trying, as well as push for more access to British Columbia's permitting process. The Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority has released some details on proposals to supply natural gas to the Interior Energy Project. An ADA press release lists 16 proposals, including 9 for Cook Inlet liquefied natural gas processing plants, 3 for plants on the North Slope, plus proposals for a pipeline to the interior from Cook Inlet, imported LNG, and imported propane. No names or dollar figures are listed. ADA said earlier this month it would release additional information after an IEP project partner is recommended to the ADA board.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Raven Alaska, connecting Alaska's business travelers across the state for more than 50 years. Find more at flyraven.com.
These days, being into STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, doesn't make a girl a geek. It makes the world a better place. If you like numbers, nature, computers, and figuring out how the world really works, go to beanengineeralaska.com. You just might like what you learn. And it's not just for girls. This message on Alaska Public Media brought to you by ExxonMobil in Alaska.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Joe Sykes. This week on AK, Mailboat Man. Like many rural areas, the south side of Ketchikan Bay doesn't get traditional mail service. Instead, its communities rely on a mailboat to deliver to small postal drop-offs. It's the kind of job that attracts a special type of person who's willing to make the trek across the bay, rain or shine, snow or ice, twice a week, every week, year-round. KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver took a trip on the mailboat with the man who's been doing just that for the last 30 years.
Dave Seaman lives up to his name. He's a lanky 60-something fisherman. He wears durable pants and old sweaters and sets his week around the mail.
I wouldn't know what day it was if it wasn't Tuesday or Friday to hang it on.
We meet at the Homer Post Office to pick up the mail. He doesn't really like town. That's why he lives across Ketchikan Bay in Little Tutka, his one stop on today's mail route. When he shows up, he brusquely walks in the back door, punches his time card, and heads straight for a tray marked Red Mountain. Mountain, the name given to the mail drop for Little Tutka back in the day of the old chrome mine, which has since shut down. In recent years, the name has been reduced to the code RDO, a casualty of modern technology.
Switching over everything to machine sorting. So everything you mail here goes to Anchorage and machine sort it. So we lost our Red Mountain address, which everyone loved.
He tosses mail in different piles. He knows to forward a few letters to Homer addresses for Tutka residents summering here in town.
Oh, I know everybody. I know where they are in the summer and in the winter and everything else.
Then he stuffs everything into a large yellow mail bag and hightails it out the door.
All right, that's it. We got all our stuff. We can go. Head across the bay. Fun part begins.
We head down to the harbor and onto his old green and white beast of a boat. As soon as we're out on open water, he relaxes and starts to smile.
I started it in 1987, so that makes almost 30 years. Yep. And it's kind of a thing that holds my whole life in line, really.
Less than an hour later, we arrive in Little Tutka Bay. Seaman grounds the front of his boat on the rocks.
There's the rocks right there.
And like a seafaring Santa Claus, tosses the mail sack over his shoulder and jumps off the bow. The mail shed is a shack-like cabin haphazardly perched on a steep incline, not too far above the water.
Well, you stumble up the beach and then you climb up on a rock and then you go up on top of this log and then there you are. You're right in the back door, which the bear tore off.
Inside the shack, there's a big fish toad. He's lucky that today there's only a handful of mail. He once served as the de facto moving company for a family coming from Bethel, hauling everything from the boat to the shack and back again.
That was fun. That was the biggest collection of Blazo boxes I've ever seen.
Once he's done, he hops down. Back on the beach, Seaman stops and takes a minute to look around.
Listen. There's no noise here. No noise of tires on the highway. That's the main thing. It's just quiet and beautiful. I lived over here for 20 years when I first got to the Homer area and raised a family here. And always missed it when we moved to town to put kids in the school and all of that. And so I lived 20 years in town and now I'm back. This is my home.
He says this job pays for his boat habit, keeps him connected to his neighbors and friends, and it allows him to give back to his community.
If I didn't have somewhere I had to go, I'd stay back here and never come out, probably. You know, I've turned into a hermit. Yeah, it's fun. It's just fun. More, I'd probably do it for nothing, but don't tell him I said that.
And he believes in mail. It's more personal, perhaps more genuine. It's managed to hang on through the hustle and bustle of modern life. And Little Tutka resident Gregor Welpton agrees.
David provides a vital link for us here. You know, he's the guy who, you know, no matter what's going on in the bay, middle of the winter, or even the beautiful days of summer, you know, goes across and provides the link for us to, you know, pay our bills and, you know, get what comes in the mail.
Back on the shore, it's time to head out. Seaman still has some letters for his neighbors, like Gregor, that he'll hand deliver on his way back home to his little cabin. We haul ourselves back onto the bow of his boat, and as he starts it up, he bemoans the loss of the old Little Tutka mailing address once again. Red Mountain via Homer, replaced by plain old RDO.
It's not a really good fit, but it's what we got. Maybe we could get it changed back. I always thought it'd be fun to have our own zip code and give me a stamp so that we could be one of those places where people collect postal stamps from. Maybe that'd put us on the map. No, I don't want us on the map. What am I saying?
He says he'll do this job until the day he dies, providing an important connection for the folks who live out here, but hoping they won't have to get too much more connected, though, as the years go by. For AK, I'm Shady Grove Oliver in Little Tutka Bay.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week, we're talking with Brandon Hall, the head brewer at Resolution Brewing Company, which opened a few months ago in Anchorage's Mountain View neighborhood. Hall first came to Alaska with the Air Force after college.
So I came up here, I loved it, extended as long as I could, and I left kicking and screaming over to Washington, D.C., and I was there for a couple years and decided I was done. And during that whole time, I plotted on how I could come back to Alaska and stay. I've been brewing since about 1998. Fell in love with beer and I've been brewing throughout the years. And I was in the military for about 7 years and decided a long time ago that when I was done doing that, then I wanted to have my own business. And if you're going to own your own business, it should be something that you're passionate about. So this is how I ended up doing it. March 13th, Friday the 13th, actually, is when we opened. So we just turned 4 months. Response has been fantastic and somewhat overwhelming. Our biggest problem is making enough beer to meet demand. So we've been slowly adding more days of the week to be open. We were initially open only 2 days a week and couldn't even supply that. Now we're getting caught up with production, and we actually have 2 more tanks coming that are double the size of our current tanks, which will then basically double our capacity. And we're really looking forward to that because, like I said, our biggest problem is meeting demand. I have probably a favorite beer style, maybe a Belgian triple, only because it's the winter warmer, because it's high ABV, but it's also almost like a big wheat beer, so it's great to drink in the summer. So for me, a well-done Belgian triple would be my desert island beer, if you will. I think my number one favorite thing is when someone comes into the brewery and they have a glass of one of our beers and their face lights up, and you can just tell that whatever is on their shoulders that accumulated throughout their workday is sort of instantly melting away, and they seem much more relaxed and happy and enthusiastic, and that makes you feel really good.
Brandon Hall is the lead brewer at Resolution Brewing Company in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. If you want to tell your story, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Shady Grove Oliver, Annie Fite, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Joe Sykes.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, they can be found at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media. We had reports tonight from Dacia Eaton in Bethel, Angela Denning in Petersburg, John Ryan in Unalaska, Lisa Fu and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future, delivering oil today, sustaining operations for tomorrow. And by First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. Many Alaskans who die in boating accidents don't die of hypothermia. Without a life jacket, drowning kills long before hypothermia does. More at pledgetolive.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Broken hips and head injuries can have life-altering effects, especially for older adults. But no matter how old you are, it's important to be physically active to prevent injuries. Activity can also increase your strength, balance, and can be done at any age. Ask your healthcare provider about activities that will improve your health. Learn more about starting a new activity at injuryprevention.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.